taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the next case, the United States versus Klug. Mr. Gross.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Michael Gross. I'm appearing on behalf of Joseph Klug. He is the appellant in this case. Mr. Klug was charged with and pled guilty to one count of possession of child pornography and one count of producing child pornography. The district court imposed the maximum sentence possible under the statutes, 10 years for the possession count and 30 years for the production count. And then in order to effect a total punishment of 32 years, he had 8 years of the 10-year sentence to be served concurrently with the 30-year sentence. This appeal raises just one question, and that is the substantive reasonableness of the sentence pursuant to Section 3553. Mr. Klug has begun his brief, and I'll begin the argument with an acknowledgement of the standard of review. He has his work cut out for him. I have my work cut out for me because it's tough to get a sentence reversed or altered by challenging it as reasonable. That's very clear in this circuit. But if there ever was a case for reversing, for modifying a sentence, for arguing that a sentence is substantively unreasonable, this would be that case, despite the offensiveness of the crimes. To begin with, placing the production offense, and it's only the production sentence of 30 years that's being challenged in this appeal, to place that offense on the spectrum of crimes involving the production of child pornography, defense counsel and Mr. Klug in the district court and again in this court have endeavored to acknowledge the gravity of what Mr. Klug did. 15 years is a long sentence. 30 years is an extremely long sentence. And we make no suggestion that this was anything but a serious crime. However, this was not a serial producer. This is not hardcore pornography in which children are shown in a studio either being molested or raped by adults or being induced or coerced to have sex with each other. The produced pornography in this case was made by surreptitiously placing a video camera in places where young boys would be likely to be seen naked, and then capturing what video was captured and offering that on the Internet in exchange for other pornography. It's a crime. It's been acknowledged in the briefs, it's been acknowledged in the district court as a serious crime, as a horrible crime. But it is distinguishable, and it's important to distinguish it, because of the terms of Section 3553A, from the conventional notion of hardcore child pornography production. In addition to the distinction between what Mr. Klug did, bad as it is, and what conventional hardcore child pornography consists of, there's also the defendant himself to consider. This is Mr. Klug's first criminal offense of any sort. The district court noted he didn't have so much as a traffic ticket in his background. He was a 30-year-old man at the time of his sentencing. He had never molested a child. He had never touched a child in an inappropriate or illegal way. Had caused no physical harm to a child. He had no history of criminal activity. He had worked hard his life, and he had maintained strong family ties. He supported his family, and his family supported him, continues to support him throughout this ordeal. In short, there are two provisions of Section 3553 that just can't be squared with the sentence that was imposed in this case. The first one is the general requirement that a sentence be sufficient but not greater than necessary to impose a reasonable punishment for the in the context of the case. And the second is that unwarranted disproportionate sentences be avoided. And the bottom line of this appeal, the essence of the appeal, is this. If Mr. Klug gets 30 years with his background and with the nature of his offense as compared to the background of a serial criminal child pornography producer, and in the context of his what he produced versus what that other person produces, if he gets 30 years, what do you have left that's proportionate to give to the other defendant?
Well, you know, that's a really hard argument to make, and I understand the difficulty of it, but once a defendant has gone beyond the pale, there are some acts that are so bad they deserve a major punishment, and then there are worse activities, worse conduct that deserve worser punishments. But when you've gotten out to that outer end, it's very hard to measure the differences. Now, you say he wasn't a serial producer of this, but he did this over an extended period of time and had a massive, massive child pornography collection, the largest I think this experienced judge had ever seen. And he used his position as a youth minister to put himself in positions where these trusting children had gone on these overnight camping trips and so forth. That's really out there. I know there are more extreme situations that exist and have been charged, but that's pretty far out there.
I would want to take pains to agree that this is beyond the pale. And this is production of at least the one count of the child who was observed videotaped masturbating was child pornography. But the fact remains that the statute could have provided for a minimum sentence of 30 years and a maximum sentence of 60 years, but that's not what Congress chose. The
guideline recommendation here was life imprisonment, wasn't it?
The guideline calculation came to life imprisonment because of the possession charges, because of the extent of the child pornography collection that Mr. Klug had amassed. The guidelines, as I understand them, for his production offense were considerably less than the 30-year sentence that he got. And Section 3553A does have a provision that requires sentencing courts and this court in review to avoid disproportionate sentences. And that still leaves this bottom line question. What he did is bad. What he did can be called horrible. But it's not what other people are going to come before this court having done. There was no physical harm to a child. I'm not minimizing the offense.
There was some touching, but not charged as sexual touching.
The district court was fairly clear about this, and the record is very clear about it. He had made a statement to the FBI investigator. Mr. Klug made a statement to the FBI investigator that he put himself in a position to be able to put a hand on a child or to brush against the child, and that pleased him. But the district court made a very specific finding, and the record is devoid of evidence to the contrary, that he never touched the child in a way that was illegal or inappropriate. What went on in his mind may be relevant, but to get him from 15 years to 30 years because of what went on in his mind when he put his hand on a child's shoulder or brushed against the child, that gets close to punishing him for what he's thinking.
You might want to save some of your time.
I do see the lights on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gross. Ms. Garrison.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honor. Suzanne Garrison representing the United States. I think it is helpful that counsel has focused this court's attention on the bottom line. And essentially what he explains is that there is no evidence that this defendant ever touched or physically molested a child. So what sentences remain for individuals who do so? If we step back and look, this defendant faced a 40-year statutory cap. He received a sentence of 32 years imprisonment. That is below the sentence that could have been imposed. It is also below the presumptively reasonable guideline range of life. Now, whether or not a child pornography producer has ever molested a child is not the litmus test. It just isn't. And there is no rule in this area of law that says every dog gets one free bite. It is entirely appropriate in this case to remember that though child pornography production need not involve touching a child, it still is an act of sexual exploitation of a child. The district court is allowed to evaluate the risk of recidivism and ask not just, will this defendant ever harm a child, but will this defendant ever produce child pornography again? Will he ever possess, receive, distribute child pornography again?
Well, as I understand it, for instance, this stuff that he produced was not very comparable with what was involved in the Garthus case. Is that right?
Well, in the Garthus case, Your Honor, that defendant was charged with possession, transportation, and receipt. In Garthus, he was not charged with production. In his criminal history, he had a prior conviction for possession of child pornography. His prior criminal conduct, not resulting in conviction, included an instance where he filmed himself cutting the underwear off of a child. Defendant Klug was convicted of an offense that is more serious than the offense of conviction in Garthus. And to answer the question, what sentences remain for defendants who do commit hands-on offenses? The answer to that question is the statutory scheme not only provides for life sentences for recidivists, we've actually had defendants sentenced to as long as life plus 10 years.
Now, my question is focused on exactly what Mr. Gross was arguing. What sort of stuff did this guy produce? Period.
Your Honor, in this case, the films were made through surreptitious filming. The act of production that was charged in the indictment involved the placing of a camera in a tent. By happenstance, the young male was masturbating in the tent. The act of production included excerpting that most explicit part of the video and disseminating it over the internet. There were six other church boys who were filmed surreptitiously, either showering or using the toilet. There were two more boys who were filmed surreptitiously at a fitness center. They were never identified. All of the pornography, save for the offense charged in the indictment as production, all of the production involved lascivious display of the genitals, which is within the definition of child pornography.
Well, that may be true, but what kind of pornography is it, I think, is the issue. Is it the worst or the best or some kind of middle ground?
The pornography that was produced is not among the most graphic or heinous types of pornography produced. But what Judge Reagan had to consider was the full range of criminal conduct.
And how does this material compare with the materials produced in the Noel case? Are you familiar with that case?
The Noel case, off the top of my head, I am not, Your Honor. I can tell you that in his collection, part of which was put into evidence before the district court, this defendant possessed images including, you know, bondage, penetration of infants.
Well, that may be true, but we're talking about production here.
And, Your Honor, I think when Judge Reagan imposed less than a 40-year sentence, he took into consideration the nature of the material produced. And it was submitted to the court as an exhibit at the time of filming. In terms of gauging how bad this material is or how serious this material is, one of the families of the church boys filmed did submit a victim impact statement. And what they explain is this offense has caused them to have a loss of trust in chaperones who they leave their children with. The child does not know he was filmed surreptitiously. His pictures are now on the internet and in law enforcement databases. The family explains they dread the day that he will be informed about his victimization. Now, the fact that a child wasn't raped or sodomized is fortunate, but how does a child feel to hear that someone has photographed their genitals and put them on the internet? That is still victimization. There is in this case as well another set of extraordinarily aggravating factors. This defendant had a fictional online persona in which he was a father of a son. He would chat online. He would share images of child pornography. He would encourage others on the internet to share their private collections. The case agent explained that that would be a reference to newly created child pornography. Pornography coming from homes where children have not been rescued are still being victimized. Judge Reagan properly considered this troubling internet chat in imposing sentence. He did observe that while there was no evidence that this defendant had ever molested a child, that would be a question that would always be asked about him. Would he ever, if given a chance, harm a child? Unless there are no further questions from the court, I would rest on the government's brief. We would ask for the sentence to be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Garrison. Mr. Gross?
The court need only read the sentencing transcript, in particular Mr. Klug's statement in allocution at sentencing, to see very clearly his recognition, his late recognition, but his recognition of the harm that he had done and the victimization that he had caused. So there's nobody's here quarreling that there was no harm done and that there was no victimization. The question is, do we have a proportionate sentence? Because Mr. Klug's sentence has to be rationalized with other sentences for the same offense. The Rita versus United States makes it very clear that the guidelines are an evolving thing. The decision in this case is part of what the guidelines become in the future. And if Mr. Klug, for these crimes and with his background, ends up with a 30-year sentence, the maximum sentence possible for producing pornography, that has an impact on how these cases are sentenced, a direct impact on the guidelines. And so this isn't just Mr. Klug's case. This is a case with implications. But it is also Mr. Klug's case. He's got a 30-year sentence. We haven't challenged the 10-year sentence for possession of child pornography in this appeal. This appeal is concerned only with the 30-year sentence, and that needs to be, under Section 3553, a sentence that is proportionate to other sentences for people who have committed, other people who have committed the same offense. My time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gross. Thank you, Ms. Garrison. The case is taken under advisement.